I called this episode of Another World is Possible, Goodman 2020, Part 2. Goodman 2020 being a dystopian novel by Fred Feil, written in the late 1970s and early 80s, and set in this very year, 2020. To listen to Part 1, go to the Old Mole Variety Hour website for the August 10th program. In Part 1, I posed a question to Old Mole listeners. If you knew 2 or 3 decades ago what you know now about the ways our society has gone off the rails, the vastly increased social and economic inequities, the political authoritarianism, the racial and gender repressiveness, the environmental depredation, if you had been alive then and able to foresee all of that, how would it have affected the choices you've made? Would you have acted differently then and in the interim than you have? Would you have devoted your life any differently? I called this the Cassandra problem, Cassandra being the woman of ancient Troy, gifted by the gods with the ability to foretell the future, but punished by them by having nobody believe any of her prophecies. Isn't this close to the challenge faced by writers of dystopias? Fred Feil, or his near contemporary Octavia Butler, sought out underlying tendencies in the society in which they lived and projected them into the future as warnings to their contemporaries. Some writers of dystopias project far into the future, but Fred Feil and Octavia Butler set their warnings in our own times, 2020 for Feil, 2023 for Butler. Why aim for now? For one thing, think of the significance of 2020. As well as a calendar year, it's a synonym for clear vision. Feil's protagonist comes to see, to understand, how the horrors of the society, the environmental devastation, the poverty and racism, the runaway capital and joblessness, the exploitation of other countries, the corporate control of politics are all linked to each other and based in a system which aims to commodify everything, including friendship, to turn everything into profits for a small elite. Here's how Ernest Goodman comes to understand the systemic nature of the problem, as he meets the powerful CEO who's hired him as a paid friend.
If power is the charge in a grid work and we occupy the junctures of the grid, if power passes through us to be redirected, dispersed, passed along, if no one in any position on the grid holds power, if power holds us, if this is true, then it may be misleading to speak of the inner character, the soul of a corporate president. Not only because it is not he himself who is important, his temperament, personality, etc., as opposed to his position on the grid, but because it may be that in that position, his power, the sheer overcharged aggregate of the entire system directed to his juncture, to him, may have long since burnt away any inner being he might once have had. He will, no doubt, retain his small likes and dislikes, a taste for veal, a predilection for certain body types, a sad fondness at the cry of a mourning dove. He will, always at some risk and expense, have his own private games for restoring some vestigial sense of self. Yet he, more so than the lowliest worker in Brazil or Taiwan, will have no real identity apart from his position on the grid. The name of the man at the head of the table is Richard Dick Devine.
There's another reason for setting the dystopia in the near term: to motivate at least the possibility of action. If you were writing a novel meant to warn your contemporaries about what's to come, and you set it 300 years in the future, with interplanetary commuting and races of attacking robots, it's harder to know how to resist now, where to even find glimmers of hope. And what about hope? There's a convention in much of dystopian literature that love between two individuals provides a sanctuary from the overwhelming forces outside and a base for resistance, however vulnerable, temporary, or illusory. In Goodman 2020, love is difficult, is impacted by the distorted society around it, but is nevertheless a place to come home to until it isn't. Here, from the point of view of Goodman's lover, is what the commodification of everything, the turning even of relationships into profit opportunities, has meant for the possibility of intimacy, both emotional and sexual.
Overdefined by the past, unable to become a consumer like the rest, yet the present sucks the past dry, empties out the concepts of husband, lover, marriage, family she has tried to keep full. And by 2020, there is no movement that will help her see first the corruption in the concepts themselves, then their necessary erosion as the system first uses up love as an advertising ploy, then eliminates the economic dependence that underpins marriage and the family by depriving virtually everyone of a job. Now, within that system's inner circle, everyone, except the few men at the very top, is roughly equal before the neuter desire to get, to buy, to use up. Now, though occasionally a few corporate wives still get together in groups to talk about themselves and their men, women's liberation has dribbled away. There is no defense for her against the way the present guts her past. No future she can dream.
Both Ernest Goodman's vulnerability to corporate manipulation and his resistance to being turned into a cog in that soulless system come from his attachment to the distorted but yet real love for his partner and her son. In Goodman 2020, the author doesn't turn love into the saving grace. It's the deliberate corporate destruction of that love in order more completely to control Goodman that's the stimulus to revolt. And the hope comes from the possibility of solidarity among the marginalized, the excluded. Goodman gets an unexpected early glimpse of these folks on his first travel in the corporate jet.
When he twists his oddly heavy head to look out the wide paneling, he does not see the city he could recognize. No, not the official city of malls, trans, financial and residential districts, butting up against a few somewhat more dangerous zones. But that city, all of it, like the edge of a thumbnail on the tip of the bay, pressed to its edge by the splay of the thousands of houses, shacks, huts, the patterned maze extending down the peninsula, even now as far as he can see, until the jet reaches the clouds and the picture is blotted out. And in that second, Ernest has seen the whole city, its invisible part too, the part of it that used to be working and middle-class suburbs, now a lush forest of human beings, Chicanos and blacks and everyone else who is allowed to live there, crossing the border zones in broad daylight if they have to reach the city, you can't stop them, living in their self-built shacks with 3, 4, 5 other families in the gutted remains of suburban tracts, now without plumbing, heating, water, electricity. Such areas exist in every major American city in 2020-21. Though in the case of San Francisco, the peninsula serves to restrict their growth somewhat. But even in the Bay Area, They have been a security nightmare ever since the decline of the automobile. The race for the few remaining jobs and the rush to defend the nation's business and financial centers in the panics and riots of the late 90s. The borders must be kept heavily guarded. They must not be allowed in, either to get or to ruin anything. We must not acknowledge their presence at all. And so Ernest is shocked and does not know what to do with the sight, any more than we know what to do with the pictures of the packing case huts next to those high-rises in Rio or Manila or Lagos today. The clouds swallow him up and the plane levels out and takes off straight forward, and he turns to talk to his client.
I'm not going to tell you the plot details of how Fred File marinates his bleak 2020 warning with a smidgen of hopefulness. Only this, that a good outcome, a decent society, is far from assured, but that solidarity is possible, especially across racial lines, and therein lies our hope. It's a strong and appropriate message from a writer decades back, forecasting what we'd face in our year of dystopia, 2020. Fred File wrote Goodman 2020 so that we'd know another world is possible.